Hi and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atiq Ahmed Bhatti, a fourth generation homeopath with over 25 years of professional experience and practice in this field of healing. The Homeopathy Health Show is the online voice of homeopathy around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing, which is suitable for all ages, young and old. Every week, I invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy. Why not visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast button to listen to the latest episodes. So let's begin today's show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network with me, Atiq Ahmed Bhatti, as your weekly host. And as always, I hope you're well, and of course, I hope you've had a very pleasant week indeed. Now, I'm always delighted, aren't I? But I'm thrilled today, I have to say, to welcome Anne Lovett to the Homeopathy Health Show. Now, Anne is a professional musician, a violinist, in fact, and has performed in the UK West End theatre shows, namely Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Evita, and Love Never Dies. Alongside this, she also studied homeopathy. Now, she works with the City of London Symphonia at the present moment in time. Anne has been a professional homeopath for the past 15 years and has spent many years helping young people suffering from mental health conditions and has led countless workshops on music, mindfulness, and meditation. And we're going to talk a lot about mindfulness today, actually. And this is, it's a sheer delight to have Anne on board. So without further ado, Anne, welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
It's wonderful. And I know that earlier in the year, you did join me on my companion show, which is on Instagram Live, called Homeopathic Voices. So anyone who's interested to know or to follow up, I suppose, from this episode, do go to my Instagram account, like_treatslike, and you'll be able to see Anne and myself having a really, really thorough conversation indeed. You can also find it on YouTube, again, like_treatslike. Anne, I was going to actually ask you about music and your journey to becoming a violinist. And how did that happen?
Well, I was very lucky because I was born into a very musical family. In fact, my father, although he wasn't a professional musician, he actually worked for the National Call Board in Scotland, but he was in the war, the Second World War, and on the day that peace was declared and the troops were all released and given a little bit of bounty money, my dad bought a beautiful baby grand Steinway piano with that small amount of money then. And this piano has been in my life all my life. And there's a little bit of a story about it, if I could quickly jump through that. When he was 96, my father decided he really wanted the piano to be restored because it had kind of fallen into a bit of disrepair from many years of everybody pounding it. And my mum was a piano teacher, so she was using it too. So the piano was taken to a French polisher's workshop and completely restored. And the report that was sent to my dad with all the pictures about it was something that he absolutely cherished. It was the most wonderful thing for him to do at the end of his life. And very sadly, he passed away just before the piano was due to be finished. And then just after his death, we were waiting for the piano to be delivered. And we had a phone call from the workshop owner saying that the entire workshop had burnt to the ground.
Oh.
And they were not allowed anywhere near the building. It was too unsafe. The first floor had collapsed. And then a couple of months passed, and this was like a second bereavement to our family, really, losing this very special piano. But we had a phone call to say that they'd been up a ladder, looked in a window, and they could see two pianos still standing. They were damaged, but they were standing. And one was my father's, and one belonged to Peter Stringfellow's, the nightclub owner, and he desperately wanted his piano back because Stevie Wonder had played it once, apparently. So I don't know what happened to his piano, but I know with my father's piano, it underwent a second restoration. And because, unfortunately, the French polisher ran away with the insurance money, so the man who was restoring the instrument itself, Peter Salisbury, who looks after the pianos at London's South Bank Centre, he has dedicated 7 years, no less, to his spare time in bringing this piano back to life. And we have it now in the house. And I'm so thrilled because the next thing I'm going to do in my music and mindfulness is write some really, hopefully, some lovely meditative piano music on that instrument and get it out there. So, yeah, I was really fortunate. Both my parents were absolutely loved music and really encouraged myself and my sister, who was a very talented flautist. And we went to music school in Manchester, Cheetham's. And then I went to York University, studied a music degree, and then I came to London and did a postgraduate at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. And then I went straight into work and worked very diversely as an extra player for the Philharmonia Orchestra for 7 years, doing lots of pop sessions. I did some tours with Oasis and the Spice Girls and a band called Skunk Anansie, and I absolutely loved it. And I also worked with London Contemporary Dance Theatre, so lots of different things. And I did a really wonderful tour with the National Theatre as well, which took us all over the world. So I'm very well travelled and very, very fortunate. And then I was in the Michael Nyman band for 10 years, and that's how I met my husband. We were on tour in Japan for 2 weeks, and he was the guest trumpet player with the Nyman band. And that was it, kind of love at first sight. And we've been together now for, oh, he'll give me a terrible row if I don't get it right, but it's 25 years of marriage, two children.
Wow. Hey, it reminds me of that song, isn't it? Big in Japan from the 80s. Hey, so you met in Japan and it was
We
obviously
did.
big in Japan, yeah. So you're a bit of a celebrity, aren't you, with all these, but do you get to meet them, by the way? Did you get to meet them behind the sort of after performances?
You do, but I must say that working with the lead singer, Skin, her name is from Skunk Anansie, was an absolute joy, and all her band, because they were fantastic musicians and they were really just so open to us, because classical players making music with them and crossing those boundaries. But I'm afraid with the Gallagher brothers, it was very different in Oasis, and we were very much, it was very much us and them, and you barely shared a word. And they were massive, massive superstars. And there were some really exciting times for us in the band as well. I remember getting on a boat to go across Loch Lomond to the backstage of the huge stage and seeing hundreds of thousands of people all waving their lights as we made it to the stage. And it is quite an incredible experience to be part of that. But I was a very small part of it, but very exciting.
It's very nice. I can just picture that, actually. That's nice. You know, I was going to ask you, what is it like then, especially, prior to homeopathy, I suppose. What was it like, that feeling of playing? Is it, a lot of people say it's euphoric almost, that feeling where you are playing to hundreds of thousands of people, possibly, isn't it? Like you've said, or thousands at least. And what is that process and that feeling that and the emotions that you go through, during as well as a pre, I'm sure must be quite nerve-wracking, right?
That's a huge question, and it's never the same from one gig to the next, to be honest. And sometimes it's the small ones that make you the most nervous, and sometimes those really big events with hundreds of thousands of people, it's almost like there's a certain insignificance about your role in it in a way. But then you might be just playing something in a much more intimate setting that's much more revealing, I suppose, and that can be more nerve-wracking. I'm kind of used to it now, and I I don't practice as much as I probably should anymore, and I kind of take for granted that I can play the violin. I've done it for all my life, and I kind of take things in my stride. And I think I have a positive attitude to performance nerves now. And I try, actually, my daughter, who's studying, Emma, she's studying at Arts Ed to do musical theatre. She's got a beautiful voice, and she said that she just turns the excitement, the nerves into excitement. You have to kind of make that leap in your head, say, actually, yes, I'm nervous because it means so much to me. And that's really good. It's really positive, and you have to turn it into excitement and just have a word with yourself. And there's lots of things you can do, of course, physically to calm the body down. And I've spoken a lot about performance nerves in my music and mindfulness classes, and there are lots of poses you can make with the body. There was a lot of talk recently about the Wonder Woman pose on a TED talk, but it's just all about opening the body and, opening the lungs and getting the circulation going, and that in itself takes your mind off the fact that you're about to expose yourself musically in front of many people. And of course it means a lot, but it has to mean a lot, so it's just part of the job.
I like what your daughter said. I think that's actually really, really interesting the way she's put that, because we all get nervous, of course. And actually, there's 2 points here. But we get nervous. But to think that, hang on, this nervousness is to do with the excitement of the situation. I'm quite sure that will reduce by 50%. That nervousness or that anticipation or anxiety that one feels. But yeah, also, I mean, I think you said something very interesting, which is if you have a large crowd of people, funnily enough, it does actually become easier to talk because you're almost drowned and you don't know who to look at. Whereas where there's just a few people, the role of observation comes in, doesn't it? Because there's just a few people and you know that they're all looking at you. I don't know how to explain it in words, but it's quite interesting, isn't it? That phenomena that exists where a larger crowd is easier. And even musicians themselves, you mentioned some bands, but they've also opened up to this, that they're more nervous playing to small crowds, and it changes. Some are actually very comfortable with small crowds, but larger crowds, they're generally it's easier for them because of the sheer amount of noise, and it's almost like you're drowned in that. So it almost makes you forget. Interestingly enough, going on from that, I know that some people perform really well or do really well delivering speeches when there's a lot of background noise, because it takes it away from me, you as such, and it's just a mindset, isn't it, really? Because nothing changes. People are still looking at you, but it's interesting, isn't it, how that works for different people.
And there's no getting away from the fact that you must be really well prepared, and that in itself gives you confidence. And also, if you're performing with other musicians, it's just enjoying the fact that you're making music or making theatre, whatever it is you're doing. Seeing that you're bringing something really positive to lots of people, and maybe not everybody will like it, but it doesn't matter. We're not brain surgeons. No one's going to die. It's just entertainment, and it's very meaningful. But when performance nerves really take us over, I think it's definitely something we can do something about.
I love the way you've said that no one's going to die. That does actually, honestly, I mean, I love words, okay? And that's actually quite, so that's very good advice for the listeners as well, because at the end of the day, it's so true, isn't it? Just take it in your stride. No one's going to die. You have to do it and do the best that you can, right? And generally, people will love it. And I suppose it's like that with homeopathy, isn't it, as well? Because when you're treating a patient, especially when you're starting out, there's always this nervousness about will the questions are very much to do with, will I know what remedy or remedies to give? Will I know how to take the case? What if I miss something? Blah, blah, blah. So many questions. And yet, after what, a handful of cases, you get into the flow, and it's just like everything else in life. It's a process. And it's progress. You can't just go deep in and say, right, This is it. I've done the best cases was my first one. It's life, isn't it? Take it in your stride, I suppose, which reminds me of another song. Was it Nobody Gonna Break My Stride, right?
Okay, I don't know that
I
one.
used that for Ian Watson's podcast, actually, so it went down really well.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, no, I quite agree about the homeopathy thing. You know, that almost a need that it gets taught to you when you're studying about, you know, you must get this remedy, the ultimate remedy without fail. And yes, I suppose it only comes with practice that you realize that the most important thing when you're face to face with a patient is that they feel comfortable enough to tell you what you need to know. And no amount of questioning would bring that out of them. It has to come in their own words. It has to come from their place of comfort. And perhaps they might not be ready to give you all the information you need in the first consultation, or the second, or maybe even the third. You might need to really develop a relationship where they feel completely comfortable. And I think it's one of the absolute privileges we have as homeopaths that sometimes people feel comfortable enough to tell us their innermost feelings. And you know, it's a very special thing that we do.
Well, Ian Griffith's been on the show a few times now, and he is a well-known author, as you probably know, and he's also, prior to homeopathy, he used to write classical music. And he said something very fascinating. He said, when I look at patients, I look at the symphony of patients, you know, and it's this journey, and he looks at the different chords or notes, you know, and it's that journey of identifying the symphony for that patient, and every patient is different. So yeah, it's an interesting way to put things, you know. So actually leading on now to homeopathy with music and homeopathy and that link. So do tell me, well, tell me what happened. I mean, you were a professional violinist, you still are, of course, but what was that spark for homeopathy? Was it always there, or was it something that just happened?
Well, I was a user. And I was
of homeopathy, ladies and gentlemen.
I was really curious. I was really curious about it. And I suppose for me, the time when I chose to study was when I had very young babies. And of course, it's just amazing to know that there's some form of medicine you can give to your children and babies when they're tiny that's not going to do them any harm. And I was doing a lot of research about everything I should and shouldn't be giving my babies. And I was really well supported by my own homeopath at that time. And I think she just gave me the confidence, and I was reading a lot. Yeah, and then all of a sudden it was just like a bit of a switch with me. I knew I needed to change my life, because it's all very well being a busy musician when you've got very young children, because at that early stage, you're with them all day long, and then you go to work and they go to bed. But when they go to school, it's another story. And of course, having two very busy musicians, I just needed to change and do something different. And it was the most interesting thing. I was reading about so much, and I just thought, I was intrigued. I wanted to know more. I wanted to understand the philosophy. So I rang Nikki Poole at Purton House and asked if I might be able to study there. And she accepted me. And I was just really fortunate. There were so many inspiring homeopaths there. There was Tony Hurley, James Fitzgerald, Ruth Derham, really fantastic teachers. And they, you know, really continued to inspire me through their teaching. And now it's really the patients that do the inspiring. It's that I still get that kind of pre-performance nerves, if you like. Every time a new person comes on my screens, mostly I'm online now, and there's always a bit of a frisson of nerves, because excitement, because you don't know what they're going to ask you and what they're going to expect of you, and that new relationship is something very special and exciting.
Absolutely. And you've been a homeopath for over 15 years, and I'm quite sure it's been, or it continues to be, an incredible journey. And homeopathy is so much the medicine of now, you know, of our times. And I've said it so many times, you know, and people, probably the listeners, are sick of it. But, you know, I'm so strongly, I so strongly feel that this year is, you know, the year of homeopathy, 2024. And we've seen amazing strides with homeopathy. And, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, with His Majesty the King as well, having advisors who are homeopaths and being treated through homeopathy, you know, that just shows you the power of homeopathy. And of course, I totally accept it's not for everybody. And, you know, sometimes people can get really stuck in the science of something rather than actually just try it. I suppose it's like saying, no, I must know exactly how each component of my car works before I drive it. Whereas if you just drive it, you'll think, wow, this is just lovely, you know? So, but hey, we're not going to go down that way, but you know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. We've definitely lost touch with mainstream medicine has made us kind of lose touch with our energetic beings and our spiritual beings. And I think one of the things that happened to me while I was studying that really opened my eyes to that was a patient case that we had in clinic in the class. And it was a lady, quite young, in her 40s, and she had terminal cancer. And a homeopath took her case. I can't remember who it was now, but took her case very, very, very sensitively. She was really coming for palliative care. And her childhood had been very, very difficult, as had her marriage. There was lots of difficult emotions. And when the homeopath asked her to sum up her childhood, if she could, in a few words, she said, well, I felt I had no voice. And the cancer started in her throat. And for me, that was a real hairs on the back of the neck moment. I thought, gosh, that enormous emotion, and then this illness, and you can't help but draw the parallels. And not very long ago, I was treating a lady who I was getting deeper and deeper into her constitutional case, really, and I sort of suspected that Lachesis was going to be her remedy, and I couldn't quite completely pin it down until she said, I never breastfed my babies. I could never do that. It's disgusting. And I was really surprised at that. And I said, what on earth do you mean? She said, well, how could I let that poison inside me go into those babies? And so there I had this perfect picture of Lachesis. So the way people connect with the emotion and the remedy, I think it's just an incredible medicine. And yeah, it continues to amaze me. And we do need to be better in touch with our feelings and be able to express them and recognizing when they're harming us, I suppose. And you know, unfortunately, conventional medicine has so much to offer. And, you know, we couldn't be without accident and emergency. Emergency medicine is amazing. But often when I describe to my patients how we look at symptoms as homeopaths, that we look at them as their healing responses and we don't want to suppress them. That's quite revelatory to people that actually their bodies do know best and that the body is continually trying to heal. So that, yeah, I'm losing my thread a bit now.
No, it's just, I'm fascinated by what you're saying, because as you were saying that, I was actually picked, I've got this habit of when the guests speak, I always put things into pictures and or images or video reels as such, you know, and I was thinking of how patients know the answer. They actually, they may personally not know what's wrong with them, but when they talk, someone listening who is unbiased will find out what's wrong with them because of their mannerisms, their expressions, their likes and dislikes. And, you know, the answer is there. It's like a computer program, isn't it? We carry it with us everywhere, and we just need to open up a bit. And and the answer is given to somebody else. We can't give it to ourselves. But then again, you know, you can at times, which actually takes us on to mindfulness, because, you know, that's a very, very important subject for certainly for the current state that we live in today, which is highly strung. And, you know, do we know ourselves? You know, it goes back to what we were just talking about. And or do it's fine for others to be able to analyze us, but how do we really get to the root cause without necessarily having to talk on who we are? And previously, Dr. Jan Scholten was on the Homeopathy Health Show, and he was we were talking about this in great detail about the layers of personalities that we have, and being true to ourselves and who we are. And I know that you have a great love and passion, not only for music, but music and mindfulness alongside homeopathy, of course. So do tell us a bit more about that and the importance of mindfulness, of you know, being in the present, because we spend so much time, right, with being in the past. And one side of me thinks, okay, it's not too bad, because sometimes, you know, you do have these regrets, right, in life, but then if you ponder upon them too much, it actually impacts your present, and you can actually never be in the present at all.
Well, I suppose one of the most important things about being a homeopath, and I got teased a bit when I was studying, because I did really read the Organon and really study it very, very deeply. And I know this, I think it's chapters 80 to 84. It's absolutely the heart of the matter that Hahnemann tells us to step back and watch and be the unprejudiced observer and to never, never, never put words into someone's mouth. And I think you can be in a perfect state of mindfulness when you're receiving everything you need to receive from a patient. It's difficult because there's always this process going on. You have to be a detective as well and write down everything that's of importance so you don't forget it later and can find the remedy. But that being still for people, being present for the patient in a mindful way is very deeply important. And I always encourage my patients to try and give themselves some moments. It's very hard. I think it's very hard for most people to actually give themselves time for themselves. It's one of the most difficult things in society today, and that's probably why there's so much mental illness. But I just give them little tips, like when you take a shower, take that moment to stop and be really sensually sensually aware of what you're doing. Imagine you're showering someone that you love, which of course you are, but having that thought at that moment and letting your shoulders go and going, actually, yeah, this feels beautiful. This water feels beautiful. And I'm going to caress my body as if I was looking after someone I love. And so that's a tiny thing I might say to patients if they're very highly strung and they can't relax. I might say, well, just try that. Or if they've got digestive issues, I might ask them to try some mindful eating so that so many people just eat on the go now. They're stuffing their face with some food as they're going on to do something else. But actually, if you just sit, and it's such a communally important time as well to sit with other people. And I ask them to experiment by putting their knife and fork or their chopsticks or whatever it is they're using, put them down after they've put the food in their mouth. Because what we normally do is we put the food in our mouths, and while we're eating, we're getting the next forkful, spoonful ready. And we're always in this process of, it's like a conveyor belt, shoveling everything forward. But actually, if we just put the food in our mouth, put everything down and chew it and enjoy it and savor it. And then when we swallowed it, pick up our knife and fork and carry on. It makes the meal much longer, but it makes it much more digestible, and it makes us much more calm, and it makes us eat in a much better way. And that is hugely helpful for digestive issues. Just that one thing on its own, never mind the remedies and you know, any other help you can give, you know, give them all NatFos tissue salts. But actually, mindful eating is a very, very powerful tool. So I bring those things in sometimes to help my patients.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try NasalGuard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
You know, it's very much about slowing down, isn't it? Because we're always. I mean, it's such a rush. It's just amazing. I mean, honestly, you do something one day and then, you know, the life goes by so fast that someone would remind you, oh, you did this yesterday or this happened. And you have to actually sometimes think that, was that yesterday? Because I've done so much since then. And that's just not good, is it? And I think, I mean, I know that a lot of people now are certainly looking towards mindfulness and that me time, which is so, so important, and trying to spend quality time. And, you know, even though it might sound corny to some, but, you know, taking a stroll in the park, it really does revitalize you. And that's just one example. You've given so many beautiful examples, as of course, here as well. And There's so many things that one can adopt during the day to just calm down and, put a cap on those rising cortisol levels, and sort of desensitize oneself to the surroundings. We spoke, isn't it, at the beginning about large crowds and background noise, et cetera, and it's just being at one with yourself, isn't it, and being at peace. And meditation, of course, comes into that as well, doesn't it?
And it's important to make time for yourself, even if some people sometimes say, I'm just too tired to meditate, I would just fall asleep. And I always say, well, just fall asleep, that's fine. But the important thing is you've made that time. And it is very, very difficult, but important to do. And I think another thing that is helpful is when we make relationships with other people, actually contact our friends and do things with our friends and our colleagues. And I'm so lucky that I'm part of Mary Greensmith's Homeopathy 24/7. So I now have a really huge collection of colleagues that I'm in touch with, and that is a really supportive network. And as homeopaths, we don't always have a supportive network. And the family, again, is such important to be aware of how important those things are, and of taking a moment to appreciate all of those things, all of those relationships, and our relationship with ourself, and being comfortable with ourselves. And that's probably at the key of wellness, I'd say.
I find, what's certainly personally speaking, I find that I've really started to simplify on things, and I reevaluate things after a certain period of time on how I can streamline things which perhaps are too time consuming, how I can keep my desk tidy, even from the little tiny things, that I'm at the desk I'm spending 8, 9, 10, even upwards of that hours a day on, with patients, with the research, and of course the show, etc. And how how you can simplify things so that things are just enough, because I think the other problem we do have is there's always this subconscious race of just trying to get the best of best for everything, whereas sometimes just being simple is you can be so content, just by the simplest of things, and gratitude. There's so many things to talk about here, aren't there? Even just being grateful that, well, I have a car on the drive and that's enough. It works, it runs, it's brilliant, life's great. You have a job, you've got money coming in, brilliant, life's stable. Food on the table. I mean, it is going really down to the crux of being of being grateful to yourself as well, but being just grateful to others and slowing down and having this thought process where just keep things as they are, and when they improve, or if you think they're going to get better, brilliant, but otherwise let it be. Stability is more important than chasing, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. It's a, I think it's just part and parcel of society today, and it starts at a very, very young age now, and especially in the UK, I think children come into a testing culture at school, which it's just sometimes it knocks the creativity out of children, I think, the way the curriculum is, the education curriculum. And so I'm always fighting against that, and trying to encourage people to let their children be more creative, do more art, do more music. And music is so important, I think, and reading a literature, that just spreading rather than just taking exams and doing tests. Not everybody fits into that mold. And I think that's partly why I've seen so many young people who have real problems with anxiety. And much of it is because they're trying to fill the expectations of their parents and teachers, and the teachers themselves are really stressed because there just isn't time to do what's demanded of them. So I really think we need a bit of a rethink, not just in medicine where we need homeopathy, but in life. Just slowing down. It's a huge message. I give that to my patients all the time to try and reflect back to them and allow them to put things into perspective. I think reflection is a really important part of the consultation. And at the end of a consultation, I'll always try to reflect a little bit back to and ensure that my patients understand that I've understood them, and also ask them what they think they need the most help with. And having that time, even having time to go to a consultation, it's so important. And time.
Absolutely. And it's been a shared delight, and I'm still thrilled to have you on the Homeopathy Health Show. And you are going to come back, certainly, because there's a great many things that I want to ask you. But we have a special treat for the listeners of the Homeopathy Health Show. And this is a special piece of music. Now, you will hear the audio on the podcast, but if you go to my YouTube channel, you'll actually find the video version as well, with Anne playing the violin. So, Anne, in closing, would you be kind enough to just introduce this piece that you're playing and the context?
Yes, of course. So the piece is called Spiegel im Spiegel, which means mirror in the mirror. So it's about an infinity mirror. So there's a timeless quality. I use this music often in my mindfulness sessions, and I used it yesterday in one. It has some really important elements for life. It has a heartbeat. So the accompaniment in the piano goes like this. That continues for 10 minutes. And when you're listening, when I'm using it in a workshop, I always ask people to make the association with their heart and the heartbeat and the pulse and the forward movement. And that's a very simple structure through the whole piece. But the other thing the piece is by Arvo Pärt, P-A-R-T. He's an Estonian composer born in 1935. 1934 and thereabouts. And his music is deeply spiritual, beautiful music. And he uses two other devices in the piece. One is a low bass chord, which comes in every now and again. There's a lovely bottom octave, which really grounds the piece. And in mindfulness, grounding is so important. Yesterday, I started my workshop with everyone massaging their feet. And then we stood and we just sort of appreciated the difference in the feeling and the sensory change. It's so important to be grounded. And this music is grounded by this beautiful bass chord, which comes in now and again all the way through. And the other element is a very high, tiny note, high note on the piano, like a bell. And Arvo Pärt's music, he actually calls it tintinnabulation, the ringing of tiny bells. He uses this as a technique in a lot of his music. So now and again, you have this high note, which comes in, which for me just reminds us of our spiritual, it reminds us of the top chakra and of us opening up. It just reminds me of this spiritual nature that we all have and that we can connect into if we're grounded as well. And then on top of the piano part, which is all of those three things, the heartbeat, the grounding, and the tintinnabulation, on top of that, you have an expansive, slow, long melody on the violin, which is really timeless and really beautiful. And it's like one huge breath. So that's the piece.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Please do support the show by clicking follow on my socials. Remember, the more exposure the podcast receives, the better for homeopathy around the world. You can find me on Instagram by searching for @like_treatslike, and on both Facebook and TikTok by searching for @liketreatslike. So let's promote the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcast around the world together. Don't forget to visit me online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast tab. Here you'll be able to see all the guests that have joined me on the show so far. And of course, you can stream on demand the latest episode to your mobile, tablet or PC. Until next time, stay safe and take care.